studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
Well, Ashley Sotishak is the new director of the Sierra Club's Utah chapter. She assumes the directorship at a time when environmental protection is being challenged by changes in our state and federal institutions. We'll learn a bit about Ashley's background and get the outlook for the 2018 state legislative session, focusing on legislation that impacts our air, land, and water, as well as environmental sustainability.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll talk about the inversion occurring along the Front Range of the Wasatch right now. Randy Graham, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, joins us to explain what goes into making of an atmospheric inversion, why it results in polluted air, can it happen up here, and what has to happen to make it all go away? Unless you're the president of North Korea, who now, you've read, I'm sure, he actually controls the weather.
What a handy skill to have.
Exactly.
Remember, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by shooting us an email at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Our connections with and impacts upon the environment, and there's many of those. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Support for KPCW comes from Park City Institute.
You'll jump, jive, and wail when Big Bad Voodoo Daddy swings into the Eccles Center with a high-energy jazz performance for the Park City Institute's 20th anniversary main stage season, Wednesday, December 20th. The show begins at 7:30. Tickets start at $29. Call the box office, 435-655-3114. Park City Institute is a nonprofit organization entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998.
G'day, this is Ashley from Campus Coffee, happy to sponsor programming on KPCW. We can't wait to serve the Park City locals this winter. We're excited by our breakfast and lunch menu to complement our espresso drinks. Campus Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, up the stairs from the ice rink next to the Adirondack chairs. CampusCoffee.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And as we shared in our intro, Ashley Sotishak is the new director of the Sierra Club's Utah chapter, and she's joining us here in the studio this morning. So Ashley, thanks so much for making time to join us.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us, how you came to be in this new position, how long you've been at it.
Absolutely. So I am actually not a native Utahn. I was born and raised in Michigan, but moved out to Utah about 3 years ago for the skiing, like most of us, but accepted a position at HEAL Utah as their policy director. So in that role, I oversaw their clean air and nuclear campaigns, as well as led their lobbying efforts up at the Utah State Legislature.
So what kind of educational background prepares you for a position like this with a wide range of environmental issues and policy and lobbying?
That's a great question, and I definitely did not take a traditional path. I did my undergrad at Michigan State University in environmental biology and zoology. After that, I did a number of research projects, both domestically and internationally, mostly focused on sea turtle studies, which has a lot of
not entirely relevant here in Utah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I studied sea turtles in Central West Africa, did frog tracking in Australia, studied sea turtles again in Georgia, did Gunnison sage-grouse habitat surveys in Colorado for their Division of Wildlife. Worked briefly for the federal EPA in D.C., and then went back to grad school at Cornell, got a master's in public administration, and moved to Utah.
So, there you go. Well, I imagine that science background, while not, immediately relevant when it comes to sea turtles, has served you well in understanding the background behind some of these policies and the implications.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing is in doing that work, I saw that the scientific research sort of discipline is really siloed from the policy world. And so I really want to bridge that gap and have more informed decision making in our policy sector.
So in your position at HEAL as policy director, what were some of the issues that you were focusing on?
So clean air was a big one day to day. We were up at the Utah State Legislative Session helping to craft bills, lobbying for good ones, trying to fight against the bad ones. I also worked on a lot of renewable energy issues, also working more on coal transition. So those were some of the major ones. But HEAL as an organization, their bread and butter really started with nuclear work. And so I oversaw their nuclear waste campaign to keep depleted uranium out of the state, which so far we've been successful in. And then also worked on nuclear power. So we've been watchdogging the Blue Castle Holdings attempt at putting a nuclear power plant on the Green River.
Right. That's been going on for years, too.
Right.
And will go on for years. Probably.
Yeah. I mean, with a lack of any investment from funders, no interested utilities, they're not paying their water rights payments. There's a number of reasons why that project, in my opinion, is pretty dead in the water.
So that was your work with HEAL.
Yes.
And then you turned to the Sierra Club now. Mm-hmm. What was the opportunities you saw with Sierra Club that you didn't necessarily see with HEAL or you know, the move there?
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, not any reflection of HEAL as an organization,
right.
But the opportunity with the Sierra Club comes with a lot of added bonuses. I'm able to work on political issues and do political advocacy. A lot of folks don't realize this, but we are the only environmental nonprofit in the state that has both a PAC and a C4, which means we can directly influence elections. And I think that's an immensely powerful thing. So I was really excited about that work. And in addition to that, we get to work on public lands. So that's one of the biggest issues in our state right now, and something that I'm certainly really passionate about. So was excited for the opportunity.
So you're overseeing the initiatives and policy directions for the entire state of Utah with Sierra Club.
Yes.
Right.
We do have a conservation committee that I work with to set our conservation priorities. But certainly that's something that I'm in charge of leading now.
Okay. So that's going to cover all the environmental elements, air, water, like you say, land, maybe habitat, other natural resources. You got your fingers in all those areas.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
We definitely have a pretty broad mission.
All right, so let's spend some time talking about each one of those and in the framework of potential legislative issues that are coming up in this 2000 next legislative session, which I believe is in January of 2018.
It starts January 23rd. So
you got it.
Not that I'm counting down the days or anything.
You say that with a smile on your face as if you're looking forward to it. I like that.
So let's.
My favorite part of the job.
All right. So let's start with some of the obvious ones, since we're going to be talking about air quality a little later, and there's a major inversion going on down in the Front Range. What legislation do you see coming up with respect to air quality?
Yeah. So there are a number of ones coming down the pike right now. There is one from Representative Arendt that has to do with diesel emissions testing for passenger vehicles. It came during the last legislative session and unfortunately just ran out of time before it was able to hit its final Senate vote. But this bill makes it so that any vehicle that's a passenger vehicle in the non-attainment area, which is where we're struggling to meet federal health standards, we haven't met them for over a decade now down in the valley, it would require diesel vehicles to be subject to the same testing requirements as gas-powered vehicles. So that's a great bill. We're really hopeful to see that move forward. We've already got support from a number of municipalities down in Utah County, which is currently the only county that does not currently have testing. So,
oh, that's the only one. So that's what this would be directed towards?
Yes.
Getting Utah County to set requirements for diesel-powered vehicles.
Yes, passenger vehicles.
Passenger vehicles, not trucks or commercial trucks, just passenger vehicles. To have air quality testing, air emissions testing done.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Now, I want to ask about one thing that you mentioned really quickly when you were talking about that. And you said that, I guess, the Salt Lake or the Wasatch Front hasn't met federal requirements or regulations for a decade?
Yes. So that's why we're in the middle right now. Our Division of Air Quality is in the midst of a big planning process called the State Implementation Plan. Currently, we're at the serious level, so we're putting in a serious state implementation plan. that really needed to go into effect by the end of this month. We are currently unable to model that we can hit federal health standards. And so now the earliest we're looking to see that plan come forward is February, which is pretty troubling, especially if you've seen the grim situation down along the Wasatch Front today.
And so by saying we haven't been able to model, we haven't been able to come up with a plan that would decrease our emissions enough. Is that essentially
issue? With all the current little inputs that they're putting into this model, different reductions from cleaner vehicle standards, for example, we're seeing some tier three fuels coming online. Not all the refineries have done that yet.
Those are cleaner. That's a cleaner burning fuel.
Yes, it's got a lower sulfur content.
Okay.
We're seeing that with even given some of these inputs, with our level of growth, growing industries, growing developments for homes, we are not able to meet those federal health standards, which is a big problem because we've spent a decade now out of attainment.
Okay, so that was one bill. One potential bill,
yes.
Representative Aaron is championing with respect to just diesel emission requirements, testing requirements.
Yes.
And anything else you see coming along lines with respect to air quality?
Definitely. So one of the biggest battles that I think we'll see up at this legislative session has to do with electric vehicles. They are looking at putting an increased fee on electric vehicles, which would obviously disincentivize people from purchasing these cleaner emission vehicles. So that's a pretty big problem, especially since we've already seen the tax credit that was for electric vehicles has already gone away.
And this fee, what does this fee look like? That's a state tax?
Yes.
Basically? I mean, that's what this state would have to do.
So it's a fee slightly different than a tax,
but
yeah, essentially it's going to cost these vehicle owners anywhere. We've heard up to $225 for this fee, so it's substantial. When we saw a similar fee put into effect in Georgia, it essentially decimated their electric vehicle markets there.
Really?
So it has major implications.
What's the justification behind this fee by those that are advocating for it?
So because electric vehicles don't currently pay a gas tax, they're saying that this would help to contribute to they're driving on the roads, they're having wear and tear. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of...
So this is
the alternative.
I'm trying to picture the line item. It would be you don't pay a gas tax, so this is a fee to make up for the fact that you don't pay a gas tax fee.
Right.
$225.
But it totally ignores the fact that they have really important environmental and public health impacts that are going totally unaccounted for if we were to put a fee of that magnitude on them.
Right. Okay, so there's some representatives there that are championing this bill.
Right.
And who are those folks?
So
I'm not sure who's going to be the lead sponsor of that one yet. We just know it's going forward.
But, got it.
That's a bit troubling. One bill that we do know the sponsor of that's a good bill, so not to get too dark on your Tuesday morning.
That's what we specialize in.
Representative Angela Romero is running a bill to increase the fees for people who manipulate their emissions control software on their vehicles. So these are the coal rollers. The people that go blasting by the nearest Prius, rolling a big plume of black smoke. This would increase the fines on people that do that.
Okay, stop. You're saying that there are actually people who drive vehicles who purposefully emit large plumes of smoke.
Yes. This is
just out of spite because they can.
At our last clean air, actually the last two clean air rallies that have been held at the Capitol, they had a counter protest where they were rolling coal around the protest for clean air.
Rolling coal
rolling coal. So again, just billowing black smoke out of a truck.
And they have
typically
a device.
Diesel vehicles.
Right.
The
they have a
that
device that actually can produce more smoke than normal.
Yeah. So
that's just what the emissions from a diesel powered truck does.
So it's really similar to what Volkswagen did, where they had this technology that they could chip a vehicle so that it would know when it was being emissions tested and it would know when it was not. And so then they can kind of turn on and off this subversion of the emission software.
Coal roller is seems to be like too pleasant a term for it. It should be like asthma inducing.
Absolutely.
You need to come up with a term that is more impactful than that. So it's asthma-inducing, you know, vehicles.
Right.
That's what these idiots do.
It's true. And right now, they only get charged $50 for the first infraction, $100 for the second.
So they could be pulled over and fined.
That's not meaningful to them, yeah.
No. And so Representative Romero, mm-hmm. bill would do what?
It would increase that fine schedule substantially. Not as much as other states do. New Jersey, for example, has a $5,000 fine for the first time that you do this.
Wow.
We're looking at, I believe, and these numbers aren't completely finite yet, but we're looking at least a $200 charge for that first infraction, which is quadruple what we have now.
Was anybody cited at that event? Because they were actively doing it.
Not to my knowledge.
No one was cited. No one was pulled over.
Not that I know of, right. No.
That's enforcement.
Right.
That's a challenge with all environmental regulations is enforcement.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we don't have enough money going for our Division of Air Quality Administrators to be able to enforce the laws. We see that with wood burning right now in the valley. There's, that's a major issue, and we're not seeing enough enforcement to be able to curb.
We've talked about that, too. That's mm-hmm. the challenge. You can always set regulations. The Air Quality Board can say, hey, you can't burn wood on days like today.
Right.
Orange or red days, no burning of wood. But who's going to enforce that? Who's going to go up to the home and say, you got to put out your fire, you got to put your turn off your fireplace or put out your fireplace?
Right. Well, and so most of the incidents are recorded from neighbors calling in and saying, you know.
Ratting on, you know,
yeah.
reporting
Well, because it's
on
impacting
them.
Their health
exactly.
or their children's health.
I shouldn't
health
say rat. They're
directly.
Actually
yeah,
doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
But yeah. but without any enforcement, none of these rules have, any, like you said, they're lacking teeth behind them.
Yep.
Okay. So, all right. We got a bunch more to cover.
That's right. We got to move on.
We're speaking with Ashley Soltysiak. Mm-hmm. She is the new director for the Utah chapter of the Sierra Club. We're talking about, among other things, what the legislative session might look like with respect to some of the environmental issues and causes being sponsored by a number of different representatives. We've just been talking about air-related issues. Unless there's some other air-related issues you want to cover.
Appropriations is the last thing. I mean, just making sure that we have adequate funding for those administrators is another really important thing. Of course, there will be surprises, bad and good, throughout the session. So that
right.
always happens. But,
all right.
Yeah.
All right, how about water, in the area of water? What do we see coming up with legislative actions there?
So we have not seen a specific bill in the works, but we have heard ramblings that there is still interest in Bear River development, Lake Powell Pipeline.
Yeah.
So those are things that we're currently watchdogging. Likely with things like this, we do see them written as a boxcar bill, which means that they are... the language is usually held until about 24 hours before they'll hit a committee. So it just has a title. It'll be usually something innocuous like infrastructure amendments. That gets filled in. We have about 24 hours to fight a bill like that. So we're not sure where that will come from exactly. We've seen bills like this in the past, though. So we're keeping our eyes peeled.
And with this... with this specific bill, talk just for a minute about the concerns, the impacts to the Bear River, the Great Salt Lake, things like that.
Yeah. So the Bear River development is an incredibly important migratory bird watershed. It's a big, you know, piece of our tourism economy here in Utah. And so if we're looking at potentially draining that and instead of looking at water conservation projects. So if we looked at what something similar to a state like California has done, we could have major impacts. We would not need this monstrous investment for development of the Lake Powell Pipeline or Bear River developments if we would actually just focus on conserving our municipal water here in Utah. And groups like Utah Rivers Council have done a really excellent job of quantifying exactly how that would pan out. So we're working with them to make sure that doesn't move forward.
Okay, so that's one
that we'll try to kind of keep an eye out for during the session.
But again, it's interesting, this boxcar bill nature of things, mm-hmm. That it's simply a title. It's a placeholder, I guess, that, and then one day before it goes into committee, mm-hmm. is that right, to discuss?
Yes.
The details of it are released.
Right. So they only have to give 24 hours notice before this is released into a committee. And so that creates a real hardship for trying to get the public involved because
right.
most of us, you know, most people's day jobs aren't fighting this kind of thing. And
right.
so it's really tough to say, hey, come in at 11 tomorrow and come testify against this bill. It doesn't make it accessible for the public.
Absolutely. Most people have commitments that they can't immediately drop and head to the Capitol. Okay.
All right. So that's the area of water. Anything else? We got another 5 minutes or so. What else do you see coming up? Natural resources, habitat, public lands, energy?
Well, go. So we will see, I guess, where to begin?
Maybe there's an omnibus bill that's coming up.
So we will see that there were negotiations this whole past like 9 months on negotiations for the rooftop solar settlement. So we will see that the tax or the fee that was proposed, or sorry, the tax credit that was proposed, the solar phase out will go into effect. We'll see that likely happening. We're hopeful that that doesn't get sort of roped into this session's big push to overhaul all the tax credits in the state. So we're hopeful that that will provide stability for the solar industry moving forward. We're also, and these are two bills that I'm really excited about, going to be seeing two climate-centered bills.
Okay.
So we will see a carbon tax and dividend bill from Representative Briscoe. It had language last year. It's been tweaked a bit, but that one's going to be coming back around this session. I know he's been working with Representative Becky Edwards on that as well.
Tell us a little bit about how that one would work.
So essentially it would be putting a price on carbon in the state of Utah, which is a really novel thing. It's incredibly progressive for any state in the nation, and for it to be coming out of Utah is something that we're really excited about. But it implements a carbon pricing strategy so that any large emitters of carbon would be essentially taxed on that emission.
And that would be a tax put into, say, at the pump? State fuel taxes might go up to cover that?
So I don't want to speak to how it would necessarily impact consumers. It's still, the details are still being worked out as it's still being written. So to be determined. We've got a couple weeks still.
But that's
so
a bill to
work. So that's also, we kind of mentioned the tax piece, but then there's the dividend.
Right. So it essentially companies, I think it's more targeting companies than individuals, but essentially those that are reducing their carbon emissions would see benefits to it. Those that have huge emissions that refuse to curb them will be penalized essentially for that. So,
right. Okay. So that's Representatives Briscoe and Edwards.
And Edwards. And then we are going to see another Representative Edwards ran a climate resolution bill last session, and that will be coming back again this session. So we're excited about that. That's been really pushed by a group of students up in Logan. And so they've gotten really involved and helped craft this legislation. It died in a tie vote last year, so we really are hopeful to see that move forward this year. And it's a really exciting thing because as someone who works up at the Utah State Legislature, you know, for the last 3 years now, every day, it's exciting to see the tide shifting and being able to talk about climate issues in a real way in the state of Utah.
We had
gotten such positive kind of feedback and responses about that tie vote last year because people were saying, "Hey, it died, but
it was a win.
it was a real conversation, and it wasn't just immediately, you know, shot down. It was a true discussion."
Yeah, which is
and this
incredible.
Is just a resolution.
Right.
And so this is going to be reintroduced and recommitted.
Yes. So it'll start back in a committee again. The way the process works is once a bill comes forward, it is heard in a respective committee for either the House or the Senate. Then it moves to either the House floor or Senate floor for a full vote there. If it's in the House, it just has the one vote, and then it will be kicked over to the opposite committee. So it just sort of repeats the process. If it's in the Senate, it has to go through two floor votes before it can be passed. So,
okay.
So that's sort of the process that this bill will again have to go through. Well, I guess this resolution.
Right. Okay. So lots to pay attention to. We got another minute or two. Anything else you want to wrap up with? Any loose ends there? How do we stay attuned to this legislative session, either through the Sierra Club's website or other websites?
Yeah, so we are actually rolling out a brand new website at the end of the month, and we're really excited about it. It's going to have active bill tracking that you can keep, know what we're opposing, what we're supporting, where that piece of legislation is currently in this process, and how you can get involved. We're also doing lobby trainings with Utah Rivers Council and HEAL Utah on February 1st and the 6th. So if you want to learn how to citizen lobby, Please join us there. We are also keeping up to date on our social media. So follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And come join us at the protest today at the Utah State Capitol.
What?
This is your next stop this morning.
Yeah,
what are you,
right?
What are you going to be protesting? Talking about.
So we're hosting a press conference opposing Representative Stewart's bill, which has to do with codifying the Trump administration's boundaries for Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. So that will be my next stop today. And we are hopeful that when that bill is heard at the House, the House Committee for Natural Resources on the federal level this Thursday, that we can oppose it successfully.
All right. And where is that happening?
That will be up at the Utah State Capitol today at noon.
At noon.
Yes.
On the steps of the Capitol? Okay. So bring your air mask?
I would definitely bring a mask today.
Kind of, seriously. Yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about in a little bit. Again, your website, though.
Yes. So just visit, I believe it's UtahSierraClub.org.
Okay.
So
or search
right.
on
we'll
it or
him.
Something. You'll find it. Okay.
All right.
Ashley Soltyshek. Mm-hmm. She's the director, the new director of the Utah chapter of the Sierra Club. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. We really appreciate it. Learned a lot. Boxcar Bill. That's amazing. Coal rollers. Get rid of that niche. Change that. That's reprehensible what they do.
It's true.
Purposefully polluting the air just out of spite.
Yeah.
Purpose. It's unbelievable.
It is.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for
now you got me. Fire up.
Well, we're happy to have you here, and we will follow up with you during the legislative session to get an update about what we should be watching.
Fantastic.
Thanks,
Thank
Ashley.
You both.
All right, thanks, Ashley. Let's take a break for some underwriters. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Randy Graham with the National Weather Service talking about the inversion that's going on down on the Front Range, how it happens, why it happens, and the relationship between inversions, bad air, et cetera, and how long it's going to hang around. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Diane Reinhart with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. With 30 offices throughout Utah, we have been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976 and are proud supporters of KPCW. Our agents are in Summit and Wasatch counties and can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us on the phone is Randy Graham. He is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service down in Salt Lake City. And he's here to talk about, among other things, inversions. And we know, I think most of us that live here, Nell, over the years, have a fairly good understanding of what inversions are and what they're not. But for seasonal visitors, maybe they don't. And so this
in
is
case
an opportunity.
Our listeners didn't see my-
and for seasonal visitors, and of course, those here for a week or so on vacation, and they see the air, the bad air that's going on down Salt Lake City, they want to know why is that happening. So Randy is here to help. Bring some science to the concepts of inversion. Thanks for joining us, Randy, this morning on This Green Earth.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So let's start with some of the science behind a typical atmospheric inversion. What goes into making an inversion?
That's a great question. Typically, in a normal atmosphere, the air cools as you go up further from the earth. You know, as you go up higher from the ground, the air tends to cool. What happens in an inversion event is we'll get like a cold front come through, and typically it'll put down a little bit of snow on the ground, And after that, what happens is we get this very cold air mass near the ground, and then we get warm air above that cold air at the surface. And when you get warm air above cold air, it traps. It's like a lid. It's like taking a shoebox and turning it upside down. And here, the sides are the mountains. You know, you kind of get the pollution trapped between the mountains, and the top is trapped by the layer of warm air. So the pollution just builds up underneath that dome.
And I think that distinction between the, you know, the cold air being trapped and then also the pollution being trapped because of the inversion is a good one. I think we almost think of those interchangeably here in this state, because every time the inversion comes, we talk about it in terms of
bad
pollution.
Air, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, typically the longer the inversion lasts, the more polluted we get and the worse the air quality becomes. Not every inversion is the same. You know, sometimes, even as an example, if the lid of warm air is at 2,000 feet above the ground, that's different than if it's at 4,000 feet above the ground. So if it's at 2,000 feet above the ground, you're putting all that pollution in a smaller box. So it makes the air quality worse much more quickly than it would if the inversion was a little higher. And typically what happens as you go on in an inversion event is that lid gets lower and lower. So it kind of gets worse and worse as you go through the event.
Oh, so where would you say the lid is now? Can you quantify
that? It's very, very shallow right now. Yeah, less than 2,000 feet above the ground probably right now.
Wow. So that means if you happen to go up 2,000 feet up, you might get above the inversion.
Yeah, exactly. If you were driving up, you know, one of the Cottonwood Canyons or something, you're going to drive right out of the inversion once you get a few thousand feet above the Valley Floor.
So let's talk a little bit more about the conditions just surrounding the current inversion that we're seeing. How and when did it set up, and is the end in sight?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it set up. We had a cold front go through last Tuesday, and the inversion set up right behind that. So we're like 9 days in right now, and it looks like it's going to last through Friday. And that would be a 12-day inversion, which would actually be like the sixth longest inversion event we've had since the winter of 2003-04. So
wow.
In the last 15 years, this will be the sixth longest inversion we've had. We've done some research here. We partnered with the Utah Department of Environmental Quality, and the Utah Department of Health. And there are very real health impacts, of course, with these inversion events and the amount of pollution mm-hmm. that is trapped. And once you get past about day five, once you hit day five, there's a statistically significant increase in the emergency room visits for asthma at that point. That's kind of the tipping point, is that five-day period when you really start to see some more significant health impacts for those that are susceptible.
And the health impacts obviously impact those people with asthma or breathing issues, but it's also a pretty broad array of health issues, right? If you have heart issues, anything cardiovascular?
Yeah, that's true. It really affects all of us in one way or another. You know, it's not good to be breathing the air when it's like this, so it's best to be inside. It's best to make sure you've changed your filters and your air filters in your house and try to minimize your exposure outdoors, because the air quality inside is much better, obviously, than it is outside.
The Department of Air Quality has a great website that tracks and trends the PM2.5 and PM10 and nitrogen-based compounds, ozone, et cetera. And you can see hour-by-hour changes in air quality. And yesterday was the day when there was a big spike in PM2.5 concentrations. Between 10 a.m. and noon yesterday, PM2.5, this is down in the valley, went from 25 to 60 micrograms per cubic meter. And that gets it up into the orange hazardous for sensitive populations levels. And it's kind of been around there since. And then, like you say, Randy, this inversion is going to be around for another few days. And so we may see a continued trend up in concentrations of these pollutants.
Yeah, that's probably true. The one we do have a little hope in that on Thursday there's a weak storm system that just kind of grazes us that may help lift the height of the inversion just a little bit. But until then, I think it's going to be pretty bad. And then finally, Friday night into Saturday morning, right now it looks like there's going to be a front that's going to be strong enough to bring in a nice pool of cold air and mix this inversion out.
So you mentioned that this is the sixth longest inversion since the winter of 2003-2004. What is an average inversion, you know, length, and what does that look like?
Average inversion over that time frame has been 4 days. We average 2 to 3 inversion events a winter that are 5 days or more. But the average is right around 4. We have a lot of inversions that are actually just like 2 days long, but they're very short-lived. You know, sometimes we'll get an active storm cycle. We'll get an inversion that lasts 2 days, and another storm comes in. And those ones we can deal with. It's these ones that get to be 5 days or more that are really problematic.
And let's be clear, we have inversions up here in this valley, correct?
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Right. And the reason that we don't see the consequences of it, per se, is that we don't have as many cars and sources of point sources of pollutants that would then be trapped by the inversions. But we have inversions up here. I think the common misperception, I think you hinted at it, Nell, is the fact that somehow air pollution creates inversions. That's not true. It's inversions that happen, whether or not there's sources of pollutants around.
Right, and that's true. And sometimes you guys, a lot of times you're above the inversion layer. So like in this ongoing event, you know, I think Park City was 51 yesterday, right? You guys are up in the warm air, and we're down here in the cold pool below the inversion. So right now the inversion height is below you, so you're in the warm air aloft, and we're in the cold, sludgy bottom here. But you definitely get inversions up there in those mountain valleys.
Right.
But this one, you're being spared.
Okay. If you just joining us, we're speaking with Randy Graham. He's a meteorologist with the National Weather Service out of Salt Lake City. We're talking about the science of inversions and, of course, the environmental impacts that are associated with that. Right now, it's a pretty rough time down in the Front Range, and it's going to continue to be challenging, have some challenging air quality there with respect to PM2.5 and PM10. That's particulate matter, 2.5 microns in size and 10 microns in size. What's interesting, Annie, is that what role does snow, ground cover, play in helping to create inversions?
Oh, excellent question. So snow it can be a really important factor in the sense that your inversions strengthen at night. And if you have a snowpack, you get more radiative cooling off the surface at night. So it tends to strengthen your inversions. And a lot of times our worst inversions occur along the Wasatch Front and the Cache Valley and in the Uinta Basin when there's, you know, several inches of snow on the ground and the surface is very cold. And that makes a bigger contrast between the cold surface layer and the warm air loft. So it just makes the lid that much stronger. So snow definitely can play an impact. And the fact that we had a little bit of snow at this last event here definitely helped it contribute to the rapid onset of the inversion.
And the other thing I was thinking about, the formation of ozone. We know that ozone can be generated, low-level ozone can be generated as a function of hydrocarbon concentrations. But you actually see a little drop in, if I understand this correctly, you actually see a little drop in ozone formation when you have high particulate matter in the atmosphere, right? I know that gets into a chemistry that maybe you're not familiar with, but that's what I see.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, we have, and that would be a good question for the Department of Air Quality folks that are really the air chemist folks. But we tend to have more ozone issues in the summer when it's very hot
and
than
sunny
we do in the winter
and clear,
because
you need that sun to help generate ozone.
Exactly.
So one thing I wanted to kind of mention, and maybe this is to just dispel a little bit of a rumor or myth, but I heard some people saying like, part of the reason the inversion's so bad is because of the California fires. That's not impacting the inversion, or is it, right?
No, the California wildfires aren't contributing at all to our air quality problems right now. And in fact, in an event like this, typically what you see is we're in an inversion here, and the flow in California is offshore. And that's when they're getting their Santa Ana winds, and so all the smoke from those fires is going offshore. It's not coming our way at all.
So we are our own enemy in this case. We can blame ourselves for the...
Yes, as Professor Jim Steinberg up at the University of Utah said, we've seen the enemy, and the enemy is us.
Exactly, and that's all our cars and trucks and buses, all those point and line sources of pollution, particulate matter, nitrogen, sulfur-based compounds that are the primary contributors to these air episodes. But it is interesting that aren't we under the same larger influence that California is experiencing with their Santa Ana winds, this high-pressure ridge?
Yes, we are. And, you know, really the perfect setup for them, or the worst-case scenario setup for them for their Santa Ana winds, is when there's a big high pressure in the Great Basin, and there's an area of low pressure off the coast of California. So the winds go from the high pressure toward the low, and that brings the winds over the coastal ranges in California. And at the same time, we're sitting here under the dome of high pressure inverted. So they often go together.
Hmm. Okay. So, again, you're saying that this event may be weakened a bit in another day or two, like you say, with a glancing blow from a storm front coming through. But then probably by this weekend, there will be more a mixing of the air occurring from a little stronger low that comes through?
Yeah, exactly. It looks like Friday night into early Saturday, there's going to be a storm system that's going to be strong enough to really clear out all these inversions and all the pollution that we've capped under the inversions here. That will be Friday night into Saturday. That doesn't look like a big precipitation producer, but right now I think most of us are just hoping to get the air cleaned out.
So along those same lines, I wonder how far in advance you're able to predict, you know, when we'll have a really strong inversion. And the reason that I ask is because it seems like with that knowledge in hand, we should then be able to take some kind of preventative action to keep the air pollution from getting, you know, quite as bad as it is now. So how long can you forecast those in advance? And then is there anything, you know, what happens with that information?
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. So predictability varies, and as you know from living here, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we can't tell you how much it's going to snow 24 hours in advance, but other times we can tell you that there's going to be a heat wave 7 days from now. You know, the atmosphere is sometimes very predictable, and other times it's less predictable. Inversion events tend to be very predictable because they're under big ridges of high pressure, and ridges are much more predictable than storm systems, for example. So typically we have a really good idea that an inversion event is coming many days in advance. Hmm. And you hit right on the head. I mean, a real key for us is to be able to communicate that, hey, an inversion is going to be setting up, it looks like, in 4 days. So we should start planning to carpool now. We should start planning to take mass transit and not wait for the inversion event to start. We should be planning ahead, and the more we can do right at the start to limit our contribution to the pollution, the better off we all are.
Right. We talk about that. And, of course, you go to the air quality website and you see the advisories that are put out. Some are voluntary actions that people – now we're under a mandatory action down the front range. That means all solid fuel-burning sources of air pollutants cannot be burned. But the challenge, and we talked about this in the first segment, is how you enforce that. I know that's a separate topic again, Randy, but that's the big challenge. How do you go about saying, hey, it's one thing to say don't have a fire in your fireplace for the next few days, contribute to, you know, help alleviate this issue. But it's another thing to go around and enforce that. And that's always going to be a big challenge. These are voluntary actions on the most part that people have to take to reduce the amount of pollutants that they emit. We all play a role in this. We all are point sources of pollutions, whether it's in our cars, whether it's in our homes. And that's a challenge. It's a community-wide effort to make a difference here in controlling bad air days like this. So we got another minute or two. Do you have another question now? No?
Okay. I do. Okay. I wanted to change topics, okay, though, and look at November a little bit, if Randy's okay with that.
Sure.
Sure.
So I was, of course, looking through your Twitter feed this morning before we talked to you. And I noticed that you posted some really interesting information about the temperatures that we had in November. I mean, there were a couple of days that were like staggeringly warm. I think I heard that it was like 68 degrees at 2 a.m. in Salt Lake or something along those lines. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we had a really warm November, broke all kind, hundreds of individual daily high records were broken across the state. One of the reasons we had a warm November was you're under a ridge like we are now. So, the inversion season kind of runs from mid-November to mid-February, and on either side of that, the solar insulation is strong enough that you can't really have prolonged inversion events. So what kind of benefited us from a temperature standpoint in November, being under the ridge and having these very anomalously warm days, is kind of our enemy once you get into December and January. But the bad news is either anytime you're under that ridge like we have been, we're not getting contributions to our snowpack, which has been really, really rough start this year.
And the conditions out there are sad right now.
Right.
And
so I know we still have, obviously one more month of this year. How do you think 2017 might unfold with respect to temperature-wise?
Yeah, I think the tendency has been for us to be above normal temperature-wise for many years now. It's pretty hard to go against that. And typically in a La Nina year like this, we're kind of in a gradient between cooler temperatures in the Pacific Northwest and above normal precip there, warmer temperatures in the desert Southwest and lower than normal precip there. But the way that the trend has been for quite a few years now is that we just have, season after season where we're above our 30-year normals.
Okay. So that's the trend, generally.
That is the trend, It's pretty hard to go against that right now.
Well,
and the expectation for the next, if you look at like kind of the longer lead outlooks, the expectation is for us more likely to be above normal temperature-wise again this winter.
Wow, okay. And does a warmer Utah have a impact on the number of inversions that might occur?
That's a good question. You would think if you have a warmer winters, that you would have fewer inversion events potentially because
right.
you would have that cold air trapped at the surface. But when I look back at the trends, and it's not a very long period of record that I have for inversion events, it's only 15 years, there's no discernible trend,
no.
even though we've been having warmer winters.
Okay. And this, Randy, I just read this morning that the president of North Korea can now actually control the weather. I don't know if you saw that now. When is the National Weather Service going to catch up?
Because we're behind in that game, I'll tell you that. Because I wouldn't have us sitting under here under a 12-day inversion, that's for sure.
I know. Exactly.
Without snow on our mountains.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
But I'm sure you end up getting the
snow, valley rain.
I have to add, while we're talking about snow cover, that I again saw you posted a really neat map of the likelihood of having snow for Christmas Day in any given part of the country. And I have to say that if people have a minute, this is a fun one to play around with if you want to hop online.
Really?
I'm trying to find where we are right now.
Okay.
We have maybe about a...
Are we going to have a white Christmas?
An 88% on any given year.
Okay.
Does that sound about right, Randy?
Yeah, that sounds about right. We have a pretty high likelihood here in Salt Lake City and up in Park City of having a white Christmas. Right now, it's definitely in question.
Wow.
We have very little snow cover, and it's not really been an active pattern, although it does look like the pattern starts to become a little bit more active later next week. So hopefully we'll get a few storms in here before Christmas.
All right. Well, we'll cross our fingers for that. Do a little snow dancing.
Randy Graham, he is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service down in Salt Lake City. And Randy, what is your Twitter feed?
My Twitter feed is at Ethereal Weather. So that's like E the Real WX.
Ah, E the Real Weather. Okay, Randy.
Yeah, WX is kind of is our shorthand for weather in the business.
Got it. Randy Graham, thank you so much for chatting with us this morning. Always appreciate the work that the National Weather Service does for us.
Hey, thanks so much. Great speaking with you both.
Same here. All right. Let's take a quick break for a couple more underwriters. We got maybe one news item to squeeze in. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
G'day, this is Ashley from Campus Coffee, happy to sponsor programming on KPCW. We can't wait to serve the Park City locals this winter. We're excited by our breakfast and lunch menu to complement our espresso drinks. Campus Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, up the stairs from the ice rink next to the Adirondack chairs. CampusCoffee.com.
Hey, it's This Green Earth. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And we got a couple minutes. I just want to remind people that when it comes to snow, you know, like these snow melt systems on our roofs or on our sidewalks or our driveways, et cetera, when there's no snow to melt on those locations, then turn your melt system off. It's that simple. Because if you leave it on, it's not doing anything. It's not providing any benefits, and you're wasting money.
That's what I was going to say. It is doing something. It's using energy.
That's true.
And spending
your money. You might as well
take
a fistful of quarters every day and open up your front door and just chuck it out into the yard, because that's what you're doing when you run your heat tape system. On days like today, or the last time we had snow was, I don't know, over a week ago. And since then, you know, I still see a lot of rooftop systems that are running. I could tell they're still on. And here's the rule of thumb. For every 100 feet of heat tape that you run 24 hours a day, that's about $1.50 a day. So, and lots of homes have 300-400 feet of tape. It's not unusual.
Easily. Yeah. 100 feet is a pretty small.
That's small. Yeah. That's like mine at Racquetcliff Village. But yeah, lots of them have three. So if you have 500 feet of tape, that's $7.50 a day, plus or minus. Times every day, three, four, five, you've spent $30, $40, $50 these last 10 days for nothing. Now, you know, maybe you can afford that, but I can't. And so I think there are a lot of people that would say, hey, I'd like to save for it, but well, turn your heat tape off, turn your driveway system on, turn it on when you see snow coming, like this weekend. We may have a large enough event that it requires it, but save electricity. It's also 10 pounds of coal per day for that 100 feet.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so
that's
picture
terrible.
It in that. So every 100 feet that you run 10 pounds, I mean, that you run for 24 hours, that's 10 pounds of coal that you are burning. Remember, we burn coal, too, not just Rocky Mountain mm-hmm. Power. We burn coal.
They're doing it on our behalf.
Yeah, they do it on our behalf. That's exactly
so, it. So, Chris, you've had heat tape for years.
Yes.
And I liked to be able to give you a hard time about this because I didn't have any. So I felt like, you know, I was definitely a better steward of the environment. Chris, we had to get heat tape.
Oh, okay.
So we got some heat tape this year. Only in the gutters.
Right.
And it's off right now.
I don't oppose it.
Exactly. The point is
it serves a purpose, but use it reasonably. Don't leave you wouldn't leave your dryer running 24 hours a day because you're thinking, well, I'm going to throw some wet clothes in there eventually and I might as well have it warmed up. That's insane. But yet we have the same mindset when it comes to our rooftop heat mm-hmm. tape. All right. There's your public service announcement once again.
/ rant.
How many times do I have to tell you? We'll take a break. We'll be right back to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Hello, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Garbage and recycling containers should be placed at the curb before 7 a.m. on your scheduled collection day. Keep Summit County green. SummitCounty.org/recycle.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Time to wrap things up.
That's right. We want to thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and listeners like you. I lost
that train of thought.
It's not that hard.
Please email us with your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
And remember, this is KPCW 91.7 FM in Park City.
We've got your Wasatch back.
And PR Next is coming up next.